This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is Geek Squawks. My name is Jeff Sandhu, together with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. And on the show, we've talked a lot about autonomous vehicles. And just before we went for our break, we were talking about, you know, the trust in technology companies. And I picked out a story from The National, and he was talking about how driverless car makers, they could actually monopolize the market. And we never really talked about this in this aspect yet.
Yeah, we've talked about cars in from the point of view that lots of car makers are coming up with their own autonomous models. But no, we haven't talked about anyone trying to actually dominate the specific market. Mm.
So the reason being is because, you know, Google and Uber, you know, they've been in on this battle for a long time about the intellectual property lawsuit. But thankfully, that's been settled. And driverless cars, like we've mentioned on this show many times, it's an incredible boon to the society. They could save tens of thousands of lives every year, even more in countries like India and China, and they could prevent millions of injuries. They could even save the average American hundreds of hours each year that, you know, you could, you know, use these hours to when you're traveling to work. Like, it takes me 2 hours to get back home every day from Bandar Utama to Ampang, and I could do so many things in that 2 hours rather than just being stuck.
And also part of the reason that it takes you 2 hours to get to and from every day is because of other drivers. It's because as drivers we are not as efficient as we could be in making use of the resources of the road.
So the potential of, you know, self-driving cars or the transformative potential is you know, it's hard to overstate. And it's sort of positive to see how China and the US government, they're working towards, and even Singapore to a certain extent with the autonomous buses, they're thinking about how to regulate autonomous vehicles well in advance of a worldwide adoption, right?
Yeah, because one of the issues with autonomous vehicles is that the system only really works if all of the vehicles are autonomous. If some of the vehicles are autonomous and some of the vehicles are driven by us, then the system breaks down because the machines can only be as efficient as everybody else on the road. So if they're not able to communicate with the human drivers, it's those human drivers that then become the thing that slows the system down.
Exactly. So most of the principles that are being debated in, you know, governments are about, you know, promoting safety and about the cybersecurity side, about education. They're all moving into a very good direction. But one of the things is about having a policy in place for these makers of these autonomous vehicles to work together, to share that information, to have these autonomous cars to talk to one another. Because that's the whole point, right? To have my car talking to your car so it could prevent an accident if it was about to happen.
You want a Toyota to be able to talk to a Subaru, to be able to talk to a Ford, to be able to talk to a Volvo, to a Proton, or whatever.
But there's no talk whatsoever about this. There's no groundwork at all. There's not enough in conversations about this. Like, it seems like we're going to fall into the same trap of how Apple, you know, has this closed-in monopolization of their own market because they just refuse to share how, you know, Apple Pay. You could only use it if, you know, within Apple phones. So you can't use it for any other thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think this goes back to a story that we also talked about earlier in the year. What we were most surprised about was that all of these electronics manufacturers are coming up with their own
idea or version
of these intelligent services. So they're all coming up with their own idea of artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
But these companies are not in the business of artificial intelligence. So it doesn't really make sense. Rather than having open standards and talking to each other, everyone is creating its own closed ecosystems. Yeah. And we're at the point now where there's a danger that we're going to have the same thing happening in the car industry, that manufacturers won't talk to each other and they will come up with these systems that can only communicate with other cars within the same brand, which by its nature would then create a monopoly situation because you want to have a car that can communicate with everything else on the road.
Yeah, you go with the popular, with the favorites.
Exactly.
Right?
Or you might even find that lawmakers in certain countries say, okay, because Waymo's cars can speak to our central urban planning unit, then everyone has to have a Waymo car.
Yeah. And the monopolization of the car market is insane. If you think about the numbers, right? So suppose that there are people willing to pay about $10,000 for the software that controlled a self-driving vehicle, and there are about 17 million new cars sold in the US alone each year. Think about, you know, multiplying those two numbers, it would translate a revenue of about $170 billion in a year. That's almost as much as Amazon.com sales last year itself. So, you know, it's a monopoly that would be really bad for us consumers, because research shows that it would also be bad for the workers in the industry, since the dominant employers are only able to use their power to pay lower wages for a number of reasons. Government should also, I think, start acting up to prevent one company
absolutely,
from dominating.
Because without the competition, there's no way for workers to move from one company to another. So wages become a lot less competitive as well. Everything becomes very, very stagnant. And you will also start to see, or you're quite likely to see, a dip in innovation within those industries as well, because monopolies don't have the pressure to innovate and keep going. When we look at, say, a company like Facebook now, we know Facebook has a monopoly. But Facebook is in a position where it knows that another upstart social media company could come along and basically take all its business away. Yeah. So you see this constant innovation and rollout of services within the company. But that wouldn't necessarily be the case in something like a car industry. Mm. It could get to a point where they think, okay, the technology is good enough. Instead of it getting cheaper on that basis, they simply stop innovating and continue to push the prices up, because there's nothing to actually stop them. Mm. So it does become sort of quite it becomes quite disruptive to the functioning of markets.
Yeah, but I think it's a good point when you look at what Apple is doing, they're clearly going to move into the autonomous vehicles based on the number of hires they've had in that sector itself. And Apple is one of those manufacturers who like that monopolization. They like to have it controlled.
They do, but I don't see that as being too much of a danger at this point, because looking at the model Apple is following at the moment, the cars would be so expensive that no one could afford to buy them anyway. So I don't think it's really going to matter. It will literally be one suburb in Palo Alto.
Where it's apparently middle class.
Exactly. Normal middle class folks.
But yeah, also it goes back to the whole point in the earlier show about trusting in tech, and comes back to us. Like you mentioned about Facebook, they're now, even though they have a monopoly of the social media space, they are innovating themselves because of the pressure that we are, creating for them. We are giving them the pressure. It comes back to us, right? So I think we need to also...
Oh, no, for sure. We definitely need to say to people, look, this doesn't work for us. This is not a system that represents us or is good for our rights in any way. But also, it's, as I mentioned in the Matt Splained before, it's also about the venture capital model at the moment, trying to find ways to lock other players, other actors out of that particular market. Now, we hear an awful lot in the news about free trade and free markets, but the technology industry seems to go in the opposite way. It wants to create these monopolies, or these best duopolies, which are really not good for consumers in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah. Well, hopefully there are more discussions that happens in the higher levels of authority about making sure that autonomous vehicle car makers have to make sure that their cars can talk to each other. I think that's just a very simple thing to do.
That's on the one hand. And also it's because a lot of these provisions get just tucked into little acts. So you'll have, you look through the main points of legislation, but you might not look through Appendix 75 on page 395, which is actually where a lot of these kind of clauses get buried. Yeah. And these are the ones that actually have the major effects, and they really do get missed.
Well, I guess it's the way, we need to rethink about that area as well. But we'll be right back with two stories. And also, there's no King of the Crowd and Dumb
no,
in the
no,
Dumps,
there's,
huh,
man? No, no, everything is just...
Been on holiday, I see.
No, everything is just middling this week. Yeah, there's no good, there's no bad, there's just middling.
Well, we'll be right back still. BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
And we're back, and let's talk about... So I've been a fan of Instagram stories. I think they're quite a unique way of consuming what, you know, your friends is, you know, eating on that day of, you know, for lunch and dinner and all that stuff, right? What they're doing over the course of the day. Because it goes away within 24 hours. Poof, it's done. Yeah. And it's a very easy way of consuming any type of content. I also like some of the news publications who use Instagram stories to sort of deliver news to you, but one of the problem is that it's you can't really search for things like this.
Yeah, it's very blink and you miss it kind of thing.
Blink,
yeah,
boof, gone, right? And it's only if you follow you know, that organizations, you get to consume one of those medias, right? Introducing AMP stories or AMP stories. And this is Google's way of, you know, sort of bringing the stories habit of consuming content from a stories way into the World Wide Web, and that it will remain forever.
Yeah, I mean, if people are not Instagram users, the way it kind of works is that it's almost like a series of pictures that you scroll through with text attached. So those pictures, they might be small animations, or they might be, you know, just normal flat JPEG type images. It's actually quite a fun way to look at information, because it is geared around the handphone screen, so it's perfectly suited to that medium.
Because I don't have, you know, long attention spans. If you send me an article that, you know, has, you know, 1,000 over words, it's just going to be blurry.
Yeah,
all
I mean,
day, right?
I'm the exact opposite. I go for the articles that are a couple of thousand words long.
But majority of the people, you know, attention spans is being shorter and shorter.
Yeah, I mean, I think this kind of content is the perfect kind of format for smartphones. Mm.
Check out AMP stories. It's really like one of these. Wired says it's an entirely a new beast, and they love this. The Verge love this as well. CNN, BBC, they're all into this as well. It's not like Instagram stories kind of thing, because you can actually just tap through them. It's no scrolling involved.
You can just go backwards and forwards as you want to do, and the stories stay for as long as you want them to as well. They don't disappear after.
And you
a
can
few
search.
Hours.
So, yeah, like the beauty of it, if you search for a story, and then it will have you. You know, these are the AMP stories.
Although having said that, I did find it quite hard to find AMP content when I searched on my phone. Because, you know, when you sent me the link for this story, I tried to get the stories. I found it easier to get the AMP stories up on my desktop, which is what they're not designed for. So I think probably because there's not that much content at the moment in this kind of format. And I think maybe Google hasn't altered its algorithm heavily enough to feature these like on mobile as yet, but it is a really nice medium, and it does lend itself very well to news stories that have a more kind of visual aspect.
Yeah. If you want to try this out, just open your phone, any web browser, just go on to Google and then search for, just try out Wired. And that's one of the things that would easily pop out. And if you scroll down slightly below, you will see AMP stories. And then you click on one of them, and, you know, that's how news will be consumed in the future, I guess. So, pretty cool, though. Let's talk about electronic skin, Matt. E-skin.
I loved this story. I really did. I mean, this is, you know, one of the things about human beings is that we're quite fantastic, because most of the damage that happens to us can repair itself.
Self-healing.
But with the technology that we create, that's not the case at all. You know, usually when we damage something, at best, we can put maybe a bit of Gorilla tape around it and hope it lasts a little bit longer. But mainly, we just have to throw things away. And we have been talking a lot more on the show about technology that makes either recycling easier or makes devices more durable and longer lasting.
That's why this new e-skin can also heal itself even if it's torn apart. Now, the device is described in the Journal of Science Advances. It's basically a thin film equipped with sensors that can measure pressure, temperature, humidity, and airflow. And the film is made of three commercially available compounds mixed together in a matrix and laced with silver nanoparticles. So when the e-skin is cut into two, it's just weird saying e-skin. It's like, it's such a new thing, e-skin.
Yeah, but we'll get we'll all have e-skin in a few years.
Soon,
yeah,
like. Yeah. So if you cut the e-skin in two, adding the third the three compounds to the wound allows this e-skin to heal itself by recreating the chemical bonds between these two sides. And I just found like, wow, this is we're that one step closer to having, you know, robots that, you know, you see in the movies where they dip into that jar of some liquid.
Exactly. And it's like the nanobots do their thing. And, you know, it's like that Terminator
and you're healed,
thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
This is it. We're there. We're right there now.
Yeah. And no, it is really exciting because, you know, when you explain it like that, it sounds quite complicated, but it's not. Essentially at room temperature or a little beyond room temperature, these devices, when put in a solution, will heal themselves. For minor scrapes, they will heal themselves without doing anything at all. It's so active that the particles are literally communicating with one another and reforming that shape that they know to be their original shape.
I honestly can't wait to find them, you know, being used for... Of course, they're going to be using this for prosthetics and, you know, a whole bunch of other stuff as well, but...
Yeah, prosthetics, probably in actual robots.
Yeah,
and
yeah. Which is what I really want to see.
Yeah, but also it can be used in clothing as well. Yeah. That's one of the nice kind of aspects. I think one of the examples in the... in the story is that another smart skin in Japan has been used as a video game controller. So you can actually turn it into a set
it's
of
a
clothing,
smart shirt, yeah.
a smart shirt, and that shirt will interact with the game, and
amazing.
You will be able to control characters. Mm. It is quite phenomenal. Mm.
There's one e-skin created in Europe that allows users to manipulate virtual objects without even touching them. So
no, exactly. And but this is why I was saying in the Matsplain that we should... Yeah. have that faith in technology because things like this are absolutely and fundamentally amazing, not just in the fact that they can heal themselves and they can be recyclable and they're made from easily available compounds and they won't be contributing to all this kind of, I think, is it 16 billion pounds of e-waste a year
number,
in the US, you know, ridiculous amounts of waste. But also that it's just a fantastic technology. The uses that we can put it to, clothing that will be able to regulate temperature, for example, so that, you know, we're sitting in a studio with air conditioners streaming on us right now. What if we didn't need to do that? Because our clothing could actually regulate the heat for
Save energy costs.
Save energy costs. Yeah. But it would also mean that we've all got our own perfect microclimate. Ooh. You know, everyone's at
nice.
Exactly the right temperature.
Yeah.
You know, this kind of stuff is really, really cool and exciting.
Mm-hmm. Imagine just, you know, if you're living in countries that have, you know, different seasons and different kinds of weather, you could just have that one piece of, you know, clothing.
Well, yeah, you could just have that one hoodie that is perfect for the desert or for the Antarctic.
Just adjust itself.
Yeah, adjusts itself accordingly.
Amazing. What's on GeekTunes for today, Matt?
Well, we have a Geek Tune favorite, Courtney Barnett, Australia's kind of folk pop troubadour, is back with a new single. This is Nameless Faceless.
BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.